when you say we're going to read through the Bible in a year, we're going to study through the Bible in a year like we've been doing, the time when you open up the calendar and say, what's coming up, and you see Revelation, you realize it got pretty late in the year. It seems like pretty quickly. A Sunday morning class. Thank you, sir. Has come to the last book that they're going to study. The last book that we're going to study. The book at the end. I don't know how they got clipped to the inside a part of the time. And I think Mike's off to a real good start looking at stuff with Revelation, looked at some of the big picture things. And we're going to look at a few of those big picture things, focus mostly on the first three chapters here. But I think a lot of times when you come to a study of Revelation, it puts you a little bit on edge of not being sure what to expect. I thought it was really funny when Rusty asked, how come young preachers, when they come in, that's the first thing they want to talk about? And we talked about some of the reasons that might be. It is a book that really plays with your imagination. You really try to picture some of these big things. It's also a book that a lot of people use as an opportunity to look real smart. They say, you may not understand these things, but I understand these things. I think that could be part of it. We see a lot of Revelation studies seem to pop up. I know there's a church near my house, and it seems every year or two, there's signs and mailings that go around saying, unlock Revelation. I don't know if you've seen that in this area. I've never gone to hear what they have to say, but boy, they're sure excited to study it. It's not just young preachers, I can say. We were doing a mission trip in West Branch. The preacher there, many of you probably know John Belasco, who this was about 10 years ago, even then would not be confused for a young preacher. But we were doing a VBS, so for the kids at Vacation Bible School that our teams were putting on, and John thought, well, we'll really bring them in, bring the adults and parents in, we're going to study Revelation. I don't know how that study went. I know one of the memories from trying to advertise for that VBS, one of our leaders liked to bring up a lot of times, went to the house of this one lady who was one of those, don't even sully my mailbox with that piece of paper with the invitation there, and he trying to talk to her and say, we're studying Revelation, if you're interested. She said, I have studied the book of Revelations many times. But, like I said, when you talk about Revelation, there's a lot of ideas that immediately come to mind. Because most of us have been in some very good Revelation studies and some very other Revelation studies. And a lot of times, I think the issue comes into, we fall into one of two extremes. A lot of times we talk about Revelation, we either have that this is a mystery, that this is something that was not meant to be understood, something that we just don't have the capability, unless you buy and read my 500-page book. But this kind of shrouded in mystery approach that kind of gets across the idea that you're not supposed to understand what's going on. And then on the other side, you have the tendency to oversimplify. They say, that guy says all mystery? No way. It's simple. All this is there's a battle, God's going to win. Pick your side. And there's a dismissive approach about saying, all that stuff is just so simple. All it is this one thing. And I don't think we come out of either of those studies much more enriched than when we came in. I think being told, here is a book that you're not going to get, but we're going to spend weeks on it anyway, doesn't help us much. And I think coming in, if we're going into that study, we probably already know to be on God's side in that battle, I would think. And so somebody says, all it is, there's a battle, God's going to win, pick your side. I don't know that we come out in a very different place from there either. And yet we keep studying it. There's something that is enticing about this. We see, you know, a lot of artwork. You look at Renaissance art depicting great battles from Revelation, unusual creatures. He is working today. You know, trying to come up with what this might have looked like. Even some of our modern great artists have taken on this subject. Let's see, that's a Weird Al album cover. The Alpocalypse. I remember being in, I was in sixth grade. It was a Bible class taught by a man named Phil Dillard. Some of you know Phil. And he really likes the book of Revelation. And he did a long series in a sixth grade class on Revelation. And when he gave each of us a notebook and said, every time we're reading through a passage, I want you to draw what you see in your head. I wish I still had that notebook, but I got the next best thing. This morning, as you know, got something coming out of the oven, one room coming off the printer in the next, I said, hey, Calvin and Jared, I need your help. And I asked each of them, as we read through Revelation 1, 12 through 16, I said, I'd like you to draw what you see. And so if some of these pictures may not be what you see, maybe one of these might look more like what you're envisioning. They weren't certain on what lampstands were. Calvin did his best to make some tables with lamps on the background. Jared started with one and abandoned that. Got the stars being held in the hands. I don't know if you see on Calvin's got the fire in the eyes. One of them has a sword coming out of the mouth, and one has a sword going into the mouth. I'm not quite sure the difference there. The point is, it really is something that does grab our imagination. And there is a lot of things that can be difficult to wrap our minds around and figure out how it would look. But I think there are some things that we could say are worth knowing about this book of Revelation as we get into it. Again, we're not going to spend a lot of time in the pulpit talking through Revelation. But I know Mike's going to spend at least through the end of the year going through the book to get some more details. But this morning I want to talk about some almost true misconceptions about the book of Revelation. I'm not going to attempt to explain everything, but there are a few keys that I think can be helpful in how we can come to the book so that we can be ready to learn all the things that Mike's going to tell you on Sunday mornings. The first almost true misconception is that Revelation is not meant to be understood. Now, I'm not just going to come out and say that this is false. There is some truth here, because the way that the book is written isn't in a straightforward manner. It relies on symbolic meanings. It relies on imagery, and it relies on understanding the world of the author and the people that receive it. We don't have modern works of apocalyptic writing in the same way. Those who are doing it are generally copying Revelation. But at the time, apocalyptic writing was a well-known genre. It's a way of representing the world using symbols and approaches similar to what we see in Revelation. And the thing about apocalyptic literature, the thing about Revelation, isn't that it wasn't meant to be understood by anybody. It's that it was meant to be understood by the people it was written to. The people who received and were the original audience of Revelation would have understood the symbols far better than we would. Far better than we can. Because it was talking about their world. And I think we can understand the way this works. We may not write in apocalyptic too often, but we have some types of writing, some types of art that do work maybe in some similar ways. Using symbolic imagery and relying on the audience understanding certain things. One that I would suggest that works this way is political cartoons. Everybody got nervous. It's going to be okay. Think about how we use a political cartoon. We use a public figure. We use some sort of symbol to show what we're trying to say about that figure. And we use other popular imagery. So an example that I like to use on this sometimes, and I thought it was appropriate right now, there's the new Grinch movie is out, right? That's a cultural symbol that we know. Here, we'll play both sides here. Two political cartoons playing on the idea of the Grinch. We recognize immediately what the author's trying to do in each of these, right? Even before you read the text on there, you see the half Grinch, half donkey face. You know who you're talking about. You see that hairdo. You know what's going on. And this makes sense. You may like one side or the other more, whatever. But this makes sense. Now, fast forward time. Dig up both of these cartoons, have somebody try to explain it to somebody else, what they see, and these would seem like deep mysteries, right? How would you describe either one of these to somebody if they don't know the Grinch, if they don't know political party symbols, if they don't know Donald Trump and his hairdo? These would seem like, these would come across maybe very similar to these beasts with four faces and six wings and the ways that we look at in Revelation and go, wow, that is bizarre. Somebody at the time would say, yeah, it's a cherub. We know about cherubs. Some of the text there, even today, some of these references may not be picked up by everybody. On this one, it mentions, it compares this Grinch to McCarthy. Now, how many, for you, when you learn about McCarthy, was that current events? Right? For me, it was history class. For some of you, maybe that was current events. Go ask the kids about McCarthy. They don't know, but it makes sense for here. We understand these symbols because they are part of our lives. They are part of our cultural language, and that was the case with Revelation. It's not that it's not meant to be understood by anybody, but it's meant to be understood by the people it was written to. And so when it talks about the devil as a dragon, they were able to understand, and that might be one that we can pick up on as well. We can understand what sorts of things are, what connotations are there with a dragon. The ferocious nature and the consuming nature. And then it contrasts that with the slaughtered lamb, who is shown to be the one who is truly worthy. The lamb defeating the dragon. It'd be strange in a fairy tale, but when you understand what these are representing, it makes sense to to steal a line that I heard in class this morning, I jotted it down. Mike was talking about the image there in chapter 1 of the Son of Man with the sword coming out of his mouth and the stars in his hands. And he says, "Who is this?" And we all said, "Jesus." And he says, "How could we not know?" And we said, "Yeah, that one makes sense." And then we look at some of the others and say, "Boy, I'm not sure what that is." And you know, I want to hear the voice, "How could we not know?" Well, because that's not on our radar. But it would have been for somebody at the time. So, what do we do with that? Well, one thing we do is we spend some time learning. Not just about what's in the text, but we try to learn about the community that received it. We try to do some of that. In our upcoming classes this upcoming year, we're going to spend some time not just in the text, but in the world of the text. Trying to learn about the people and the events that impacted the text. And you know what? Maybe that'll help us look at some of these symbols and some places, other places in the Bible, and say, "Oh yeah, now I get it." In the same way that somebody at the time just would have understood. All right, the first thing. We may not understand everything, but those to whom it was written understood, and we can try to learn and try to get a little more on that. I don't want to spend too much time on that. The next almost true misconception is Revelation was written to address suffering. Maybe you've heard this. This was at the time of persecution of the church, is often taught. There's disagreement on about which time period and which emperor may have been behind this persecution. But sometimes we hear that this book is written to encourage those who are hiding because of persecution of the church. Almost. There is an aspect of that. Some parts of Revelation really are about that. But apocalyptic writing, Revelation itself, and as a genre, isn't just about suffering. It is about adjusting your worldview, and it is often about times of crisis, but that doesn't just mean persecution and suffering. So there are seven churches that are listed and discussed in Revelation chapters 1 through 3. You can see they're there, and it kind of swoops around as it talks about them. And if this was just a book about comfort and reassurance in a time of suffering, when it talks to each of the churches, we would expect to be hearing about that message with each of them. Well, let's look at these seven churches. Ephesus endured hardships, so we're on the right track. Rejected false teaching. Smyrna suffered persecution. Maybe this is correct. Pergamum did not renounce their faith. It says you are located in the throne of Satan. Probably referring to something particular about that town. It says, but they held to false teaching. Thyatira tolerates a false teacher. They're known for their good deeds and their service. Sardis has a good reputation, but God knows about their wicked hearts. Philadelphia has endured patiently, resisted Satan's lies. Laodicea, this is a famous one, they're lukewarm, right? Be hot or cold, but being lukewarm, you spit out of the mouth. They are wealthy and complacent. Some of these, it does make sense, it does come across as being a case of encouragement and persecution. Some of them, we particularly see Laodicea, it almost like the opposite thing. You have it too easy. You could use a little bit of being put to the screws. There is a spectrum. There's a variety of situations. Whether this is specifically talking about these particular churches, or if it's representative of the church as a whole, they aren't just being talked about in one way. These aren't just, we go out to the camp and we have the kids go play Romans and Christians and we talk about persecution and running from... there was some of that. That's not what was going on in all of these. The crisis wasn't necessarily a physical running for your life crisis. Revelation addresses more of a crisis of faith. In each of these situations, and through the rest of the book, it's going to be talking about people who are living in a world that looks different than what they see in their scripture. It's addressing people whose faith tells them one thing should be happening, and yet what they're seeing in the world is something different. I think a lot of times where we struggle to grab on to the book of Revelation, because it rarely feels like it's talking about us. I mean, people say, I want to know how can I apply this to my life? And sometimes it feels like that's not what it's doing. Either this is all about future, and it's good to know about future and be reassured about future, but I'm not there yet. Or somebody comes in and says, well, look, this is about the people at the time. You know, I even said this morning, they understood it at that time and addressed people in their time and say, well, that's not me either. And sometimes we look at Revelation and it's either the past or the future. And you say, I'm here right now. What can I do? Well, have any of you looked around at the world around you and felt, what I see doesn't match what I read? Have you ever felt that your faith about what the way the world should be isn't lining up with what you see around you? Maybe this isn't so foreign. Maybe it was written for some particular times in the past, but it is addressing the way that the church, the way God's people are trying to live in the face of a world that doesn't look like the ideal. That doesn't always look like like we feel it should when we read our Bibles. Those who look blessed don't seem like the ones who should be blessed. The ones that we think ought to be blessed have a rough go of it. This idea of faith crisis is not unique to the first century. And it's not something that has to wait to be understood until the future. We understand faith crisis, I believe. And the book of Revelation is intended to reinterpret the world around us. Because when you come to a place where what you believe and what you see are at odds, what do they call it? Cognitive dissonance. Right? When you have two things that seem like they cannot exist together, one of these has to be either rejected or reinterpreted. There, I proved I went to a psychology class. Did okay. But when those things are at odds, one has to be rejected or reinterpreted. Revelation said, do not let the answer to that be reject your faith. Instead, we reinterpret the world around us. Which brings us to the final point here. This idea that Revelation is simply a tale of impending victory. Almost. That's there. I do not come out of this saying, Chase said this isn't about that there's going to be victory by God in the end. It's there. It's important. But if we reduce it, all it's saying is we're going to win. Let's just wait out the clock. That's missing the point. Rather than just saying, don't worry, I read the back of the book and we win, It's saying you need to understand what's really going on. Not just what's going to go on, but what is going on. Revelation and other apocalyptic writings intend to reinterpret the world around you, to show you the things that we are missing. The stuff that we aren't able to see. Remember, the problem was what we believe versus what we see? It says, well, that's the problem is your vision is limited. Revelation said there is more going on than what you can see. Here's a picture that a friend of mine showed me. We were in a class, and he was talking about some of these things. And it's actually a picture from a Gnostic interpretation. But I like this idea of somebody sticking their head outside their world, outside their sphere of reference, and seeing all of the things that are going on that are bigger. All these things that are working behind the scenes. All the things that that are in God's realm. I kind of wish, in some ways, that this picture could be adjusted by sticking the head out and looking back in as well. Because sometimes the value of Revelation is not just seeing that extra stuff, but having seen all these extra things, we now look back at the world around us and see it differently. See it for what it is. See what God is doing. Not just a war is going on and God's going to be the victor and you don't need to worry, but see that there are so many things happening and we have so little time. I'm probably over already. We're hungry. We smell the stuff down there. So we're not going to get into all this stuff. Go to Mike's class. It's going to be good. He'll tell you all the details, but this idea of we are realizing not just that we're in a war and God's going to win, so pick your side, but there's more going on than what we can see. Do not reject the faith when we come into a crisis, but reinterpret the world going on around us. And so we start out with these three things that are so close to being true, but just not quite there. Revelation is not meant to be understood. Revelation was written to address suffering. Revelation is a tale of impending victory. And we give them a little shift. We realign them. Revelation is meant to be understood by those to whom it was. And we can learn about them and learn about this book. Revelation was written to address various faith crises in a fallen world. Not just some particular ones happening in Pergamum. Fun name. But not just happening in those cities, but different faith crises that happen even today. And finally, Revelation is a tale of a world bigger than ourselves. Sometimes when we get down, when we get feeling like one of these faith crises, these times where I believe this, but I see this, sometimes we need to be corrected to show that maybe we're putting ourselves in maybe a higher place or a bigger role than we are. You know, maybe we need to be reminded of how big the things that God is doing are. See, that's just another tell that I need to be done here. So, we're going to look at this book through the end of the year. I'm going to move on to Acts from the pulpit next week, but we're going to be looking at this book. And hopefully these are some things we can keep in mind. That it doesn't have to be an impenetrable mystery, and it doesn't have to be an oversimplified, well, obviously, thing. We can learn from Revelation. It may not all have been written directly to us. It may not be written for our situation, but, I mean, what have we seen this year as we look at the story of God's people? If we can find value in the faith of Abraham, and if we can find value in the actions of Gideon or Samuel in those times of the judges, and we can see Hezekiah and Josiah standing up for what's right, and we can learn from all of those, we can learn from Revelation as well. We can learn from this writing that seems sometimes that it's either far in the past or far in the future. But we can learn from the ways that God's people have tried to act faithfully right in the place where they are. Because we're trying to do the same thing. So, promise, I really am done now. If there's anything you need, we want to know. If you need prayers, Rachel, is there any update on how Ryder's doing? But, you know, we say this sort of thing every week, and sometimes it can come off as rote, but potlucks wait, and bowling waits, and all things. When our brothers and sisters in Christ have needs, we want to be here. So if there's anything you need this morning, let us know. As long as we stand and sing.
Have thine affections been nailed to the cross? Is thy heart